Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to the Flight Centre Full Year Results Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, Tuesday, the 23rd of August, 2011. I would now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Mr. Haydn Long. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for dialing in today for our full year results presentation. I'm joined by the usual suspects, Graham Turner, our Managing Director, Andrew Flannery, our Chief Financial Officer, and Melanie Waters-Ryan, our COO and Global Product Leader. Before handing over to Flanno for the presentation, I'll just briefly run you through some of the highlights at an operational level. Firstly, the best sales and profit performance in our 30-year history. Underlying profit before tax was higher than expected and 2% above our initial market guidance of 220 to 240 million. Good contributions from overseas with EBIT profits in all 10 countries for the first time. This included record profits in Australia, Canada, India and Dubai, and inaugural profits in the USA, Greater China and Singapore. We continued to expand the business. We had 7.5% growth in shops and business numbers during the year, giving us 2,243 at June 30. Organic growth was bolstered by the gapyear.com acquisition and the Garber acquisition as well. 49% of our businesses are now located outside Australia. In the leisure travel business, results were pretty good. Ticket numbers up fairly solidly. Fares are still low by historic standards, as you'll hear more about later. Best results in leisure probably came from the Australian and Canadian businesses, where economic conditions were fairly stable. We've also expanded our presence in Asia. We've got a number of shops now in India, and we opened our first Asian leisure travel shop in Singapore under the Flight Centre brand. In corporate travel, really strong results. We're now one of the world's largest corporate travel managers, you know, following the build-up we've had over the last few years. And in that sector, we've benefited from our continued expansion and also general recovery since the GFC. The corporate business generates about 25 to 30% of our global TTV and looks like growing over the next few years. In terms of market conditions, good trading performance, it wasn't all easy. There's a fair bit of uncertainty in some of the economies, as Skrew will tell you about later, and also some pretty significant world events that had a bit of an impact, including the floods, cyclones, earthquakes, tsunami in Japan, and the ash cloud late in the half. I'll just hand you over now to Flanno.
Thanks, Haydn. Good morning, everyone. I just want to touch on the key financial highlights before handing across to Skrew and Mel for an understanding of the year that was and the year that we look to. As Haydn said, TTV just exceeded $12 billion, which was a record for us. Slightly diluted because of the strong Aussie dollar. Had the Aussie dollar remained consistent, we would have seen a 17% increase, but nonetheless, a very good result. Obviously, we're averaging over $1 billion in TTV per month now, which is a record for us. Underlying profit, as Haydn mentioned, is $245 million, almost 20% up on the prior year. We did obviously look to reduce the goodwill balance associated with the US acquisition, which we flagged a number of weeks ago. And obviously we donated $4 million to the flood and the earthquake appeal during the course of the year, which has obviously had an impact on the final actual PBT number. Margins are pretty much travelling in line with expectations. We have seen the income margin decrease from 14.3% to 13.8%. We've been flagging that was a possibility for a period of time now. What has really driven that decrease over the last 12 months has been the two things, really. The first one being the increasing importance of corporate to our business, which historically generates a much lower income margin, but actually produces a very healthy net margin. And the second thing has been the need to ensure that retail gross margins remain very competitive to ensure that we're attracting the right retail customers' expectations. On a net margin basis, we saw a slight increase on underlying basis terms. And again, we've been able to achieve that because, as I mentioned, corporate sales traditionally are more cost effective, and we've seen increased and ongoing cost control in the rest of the business. Particularly pleased because during the course of the year, we actually invested around $15 to $20 million in wages throughout the group in the frontline part of the business. So to actually make that investment and still finish with an improved net margin is very pleasing. Our balance sheet remains very, very strong. From a cash perspective, we are over $1 billion in cash again this year. $377 million of that is actually general cash, which again is a very healthy position to be in. From our operating cash flow perspective, we generated $163 million. That is down on the prior year by about a third, but I would like to highlight a number of factors that have driven that decrease. The first one is we've seen a dramatic increase in taxes that had to be paid this year because of the strong profits last year. That added another $50 million with cash going out the door. And also this year, because of the growth in the corporate business, we've seen an increase in the corporate debtor book, and we've also seen a slight delay in override payments being received from some major suppliers, which meant that our receivable balance at the end of June was about $80 million higher than normal. And that has actually had a had an impact on the customer receipts part of the cash flow. Pleased to say that obviously all those monies have been delivered in early July, so it's really just a timing issue as much as anything else. Again, the debt position is very healthy. We have, once you consider our general cash position, almost $209 million in positive debt, so a good position to be in. An obvious question that we get asked all the time is $377 million in general, what are we planning to do with that money? I'd just like to remind the community that we are, in many of our markets, we operate heavily regulated. We are required to retain certain cash positions to retain our licenses. So as a rough rule of thumb, that's somewhere between $100 to $150 million at any point in time that we need to retain. In financial year 2012, we will be retiring about $50 million of debt associated with the BOSS program. We'll be looking to self-fund that going forward, which is a win-win situation for the company with a slightly improved return and a better flexible arrangement for our employees. And also what we saw during the GFC too was that in periods of volatility, a strong cash position is extremely important. It's a very strong competitive advantage for our type of organisation. It gives confidence to suppliers, customers, that you're in business, and equally we can market our product if things get tough. So with, I guess, the general macroeconomic environment being reasonably uncertain and volatile, we think having a healthy cash position at this point in time is still a very strategically important thing to be achieving. And just finally, to touch on dividends, this year we're returning $84 million to shareholders. We've declared a final dividend of 48 cents. If you were to strip out the impact of the impairment, which was a non-cash item, we would be returning 50% of underlying NPAT to shareholders. So we're very pleased about that. A little bit more background about the results country by country on the next slide, but I'll hand across now to Skroo to give you a better understanding in each geography.
Thank you, Flanner. That was very good. Yeah, look, I'll just give you a bit of a commentary on some of these things. Obviously, Australia is our profit powerhouse at this stage, but the other countries obviously are becoming more important, and I think having them all in an EBIT profit was is pretty important for our future, because obviously there's plenty of growth opportunities. Everyone knows in Australia there's that everyone they know is travelling overseas. But whether it's to Fiji, Bali, Southeast Asia, Phuket, or the North America and Europe, so Australia's had a reasonably good year from that point of view. If you have any more questions on that, obviously we still got problems in the domestic sector. There's we're just finding trouble getting growth in domestic leisure. But generally, corporate's going okay. In the UK, we had quite a strong growth in terms of TTV, which was up 20%. But our profit result there was probably a bit disappointing, with 18% growth in consult salespeople and shops. So we've got high expectations of what they'll do this next year. The states and Britain's pretty much the same, or United Kingdom. Their economies are still a bit of a mess, and they will be for some time. So being able to trade profitably in these this environment, I think, is something that's not that easy. The state's first EBIT profit, but it was still fairly modest, or very modest. And the leisure business, you know, we don't think it's going to be that strong for a couple of years, although our corporate is going quite well. And we'll probably a little bit more on our outlook in that. New Zealand, most of you probably heard about the Christchurch earthquakes, and we had 17 shops in Christchurch, of which nine are open. There was a 10th open, but it was destroyed in the second earthquake, and it's unlikely in the short term that we'll get too many more up and running. We're still doing quite well there, but considering, you know, we had to lose, we lost 8 or 9 shops. But again, in New Zealand, you know, the economy's been weak, and we certainly expect some uptake in that. Canada, we had a reasonably good year, and you know, we've struggled in Canada for some years, so a reasonably significant profit, up 22% year on year in local currency, I think is pretty good, and we're getting good growth out of that. South Africa, again, not bad. We believe we can do a lot better there as well. India, after I think about 15 months ago taking over full control of India, we're pretty excited about the results there. It's, you know, it's a reasonably, I think, EBIT of six or so million on sales of, I think, about 330 million Australian dollars or so. You know, it's quite a big area. We're in about 20 cities or so in India, and a lot of opportunities there to grow. We've got 8 leisure shops open. I think we're going to 15 or so this year. So, you know, we are going to grow that. We're committed to India for the short to medium term at least. And, you know, we believe there's some good growth prospects there. China, first profit in China. Greater China means Hong Kong and mainland. It's still very modest, $500,000 EBIT, I think. But yeah, we are growing the corporate travel modestly, as well as the leisure, yeah, through the Flight Centre brand in Hong Kong mainly. But yeah, there's obviously a lot of potential in China, but we're only growing steadily. We're not as fast as we could if we wanted to put more money in there. Dubai is quite a success story. I think a profit of close to $1.5 million Australian dollars, and this follows a couple of years ago a $1.5 million loss, and it's only been going about 4 years. So we see some great opportunities there. Singapore as well. We've only been in Singapore a couple of years, and it's got an EBIT profit. Still a fairly small operation, I think, in the vicinity of $100 million in sales. I think we're going to hand over this to Mel now, who's the guru on the flights and product and yield.
Good morning, everyone. I just thought I'd give you a snapshot of where the pricing on international tickets is in Australia at the moment. We get asked this a fair bit, and it's an influencer of our TTV growth. As you can see from that graph, the fares have increased modestly since the end of the GFC, but still not at the levels prior to the GFC. There's no clear trends. Some destinations are up, some destinations are down, more based on the competitive environment of new carriers or airlines, etc. We saw this in some other sectors as well. Just to give you an idea, on the European coach space, we actually had increased passenger numbers but flat TTV because of the strong AUD. Pricing has come down. So if you have a look at final result there, the second half of the year just finished compared to the same period the year prior, we actually had cheaper fares. So to achieve the TTV growth that we did is, in fact, a better outcome for us. So just thought that might frame up some of the TTV questions. Okay, on to outlook for next year. I think, screw back to you on high-level outlook for a moment.
Oh, okay. these are Flano's figures, and Flano is obviously the ultimate optimist and pessimist at times. So. But, yeah, we're looking at around that 10% growth. There is, I think, as most of you realise, there is a level of uncertainty for a whole range of reasons, so I don't need to go into that. But, yeah, we're confident we can build on the profit from this year, barring any major misfortunes, war, pestilence and other various things that seem to come along every now and then. The year hasn't started off too badly, so we've got our fingers crossed, and a couple of toes as well. Airfare pricing, particularly in the Australian dollar market, we're pretty happy it's going to remain fairly fairly consistently good value. And, you know, I think the HATO index shows that it's just the same price to travel business class now as it was to travel the cheapest economy 15 years ago. Very, very cheap, particularly in the premium cabins. We're still having a few fights with airlines who won't pay on fuel surcharges, and the fuel surcharges have been coming back a bit. There's no logic in it, but that's the way it goes. We have seven key strategies, and it goes across the board on a whole range of things, from focusing on our corporate travel, improving our processes in retail, leisure, particularly productivity, and obviously just the relevance of the bricks and mortar model, making sure we are a good multi-channel travel offering across a broad range of segments, and the way we look after our customers obviously has to continually improve in this environment. We've got quite a few emerging businesses that, you know, we are nurturing so that in 15 or 20 years' time, some of them may well be, some of the large profit contributors to our group. Expansion, we're looking at about another 10% or so with shop and business growth. As I said, a fair bit of corporate, but we actually have about 35 different brands. Of which, you know, they're online brands, they're corporate travel brands, leisure travel brands, various travel-related services such as travel money and bikes and in recruitment. And so we've got a lot of opportunities, particularly in some of these emerging areas, to grow over the next 5 to 10 years. Obviously, Flight Centre brand, a lot of people think of Flight Centre, I suppose, which is fairly logical, it's our name and that, but the Flight Centre's brands are probably about half, I think, our business numbers now, around about 1,000 or so, 1,100 Flight Centres globally. We'll continue to grow that. There's a lot of opportunity, as I said before, particularly in places like China, India, but also in the UK and Canada, whereas in Australia, obviously, our growth here will be modest. And you can see the next slide, which shows that map on the left, is a map of Australia. Queensland's there. You see the premier state is there. But I think HATO put this together to show you just in Australia some of the different brands we have here and the numbers. How many does that add up to, HATO?
A couple of hundred.
No, but in those different brands, it just gives you, I think there's 350 different businesses in that. So it's just not all about Flight Centre, the Flight Centre brand. And a lot of these brands, these niche brands, are quite profitable as well. I think Mel likes New York, so she's been spending a fair bit of time over there, so I'll hand over to her to give you a bit of a rundown of the USA outlook, because I know it's something that that people like talking about.
I just thought I'd sort of summarise, if you like, the key outlook for the USA and then recap on some of the key achievements that we've had since we purchased that business in, I think it was 2008. Certainly to get an inaugural profit is encouraging, but it's still early days in the USA. Just to explain, we've sort of got four, actually you're missing one here, Hato, four pillars in the US. And corporate has good growth prospects. We're going fairly well there, and we've introduced the corporate traveler brand alongside FCM to focus on that SME sort of space in corporate that's a sweet spot for us globally. We are winning business, and certainly the corporate results are very encouraging. In leisure, with the headline brand of Liberty, we think there'll be some shop openings, not too many, but the focus will be actually on improving the results in the existing network, existing shops, getting more TTV per outlet. we are actually achieving very good levels of inquiry, about four times the level when we bought the business 3 years ago. Conversion is probably more the issue, which is a sign really of uncertain economic times and a customer who's probably a little nervous. But certainly we are seeing some good inquiry levels. The wholesale business, primarily GoGo, has seen some TTV increase. We're having some margin concerns there. It's still recovering from the change that was necessary to bring it onto the same systems as elsewhere in the world, and I'll recap on that in a moment, which is producing success elsewhere, but certainly probably still meaning GoGo's got a little way to recover. The fourth pillar we have is one we call consolidation, which was actually one of the key strategies behind the USA purchase, which is taking that product and selling it out throughout the rest of our network, which is actually growing very well. And given the high Aussie dollar, we've got unprecedented levels of business into the USA at the moment. I think Hawaii is about 80% up alone, and we're selling onto those old Liberty contracts. Just to recap then what we have done, even though we were looking at the outlook, probably to congratulate ourselves and also to keep you up to date. But just as a reminder, we have made some tough decisions and some big changes there. We've annually reduced the cost base by about $30 million through streamlining, closing some poorly located stores and a lot of IT synergies. In fact, I think we've sunsetted most of the old IT systems now. So there's been a major overhaul of the systems, primarily in that wholesale space and consolidation. They're on the same global platform now as the rest of the world and financial systems as well, to make sure that we can bring our commission model in. The product synergies, as I said, we're selling that product throughout the rest of the world. A lot of the USA mainland and Hawaii is strongly selling now in Australia and UK, etc. Cultural change, we now have incentive-based structures, team-based structures, a reward and recognition systems, and that cultural change seems to be certainly in full swing, and from the USA guys at our recent global ball, they certainly seem to be embracing it. Marketing's had a complete overhaul since we took over the business. As I said previously, we're generating about four times the level of inquiry that we were when we took it over. They've adopted the Flight Centre very systemised approach to marketing. Their websites have now been upgraded, and as I said, we are delivering good inquiry. So whilst the profits are finally in a profit, they're certainly not at the levels expected prior to the acquisition, but we do have some confidence in a couple of those key pillars, and yet we realise there's still some work ahead of us in terms of the economy over there and making the leisure side more profitable. I'll talk now about some of the key initiatives globally throughout the world that we're working on this year that will hopefully underpin some of the profit growth and certainly have contributed to the profit growth over the last few years. I'll talk about four areas: our Flight Centre Global product, the new desktop we're actually launching this week, our website upgrades, and some unique products that we've already launched into the market and will be expanding further. With the FCGP, Flight Centre Global product, that's our direct contracting wholesale arm, which is going very well. We only launched it in 2007 in one country, in Australia. It's now the buying arm, if you like, of 12 wholesale businesses in six countries, and that feeds into the retail and corporate networks. We have about 20,000 suppliers in that database that we directly contract with, and we plan to expand into Asia and India this year in both a buying and selling capacity. It's a good business. It's got broad revenue streams, allows us to kind of follow the currencies around the world, if you like, and make money out of FX interest, etc. The focus in this business will be not so much expansion in product range over the next year or so, but increased system enhancement, so again we can make it more productive and get hold of more instantaneous pricing for our customers. Another key initiative is the Universal Desktop, which is part of the retail productivity plans. This new desktop, which we've been piloting in three countries over the last few months, Australia, New Zealand and South Africa, very successful pilots, is now rolling out as of yesterday. 22 August was the launch, very anticipated and going well. Was secured as part of our GDS deal that we did with Travelport 2 years ago. We haven't changed the system too much, but we've certainly created some nuances which will make it a step forward for our consultants and make it easier for them to search and find airfares for their customers. It'll operate alongside legacy systems, so the change will hopefully be minimal and certainly minimal disruption for those guys. But it's really just the first of quite a few new tools that we'll be rolling out this year to make their jobs easier and improve the customer experience primarily in the retail space, but moving into corporate as well. The third key focus is on our websites. I know this one is one we get asked about a lot. We actually have a site called travelthere.com, which we purchased some years ago as part of an acquisition to get a piece of technology. We've changed the technology now, and we relaunched that site. I'll just point out that this is a proof of concept website. We're not really that interested in growing it as a brand, but it allows us to experiment with some of our new tools, get them right, before we roll some of those components into the other bigger brands. So as an example, just last week we used the new hotel engine part of this site and launched it onto Flight Centre brand. So I'd encourage anyone to have a look at the new hotel section on Flight Centre brand. It's vastly improved from where we were. So if you want to have a look, that gives you an idea of the transacting and web capability that we now have. Another thing we've done in the Flight Centre brand is increase the international transacting. We'll do this in a very sort of slow fashion to roll out things, but we can now transact internationally on the LCCs of Virgin and JQ Jetstar. The fourth key thing we're working on is to have a lot more unique products for our shops and our customers. An example of that is MyTime, which we'll see a lot more about in the Australian marketplace over the next year. We launched it in the USA using Caribbean and Mexico's destinations. It's basically a unique offering pre, at destination, at the hotel property, and post. We focused on the destination and property where there's advantages with extra inclusions, extra service, etc. We have about, 30 properties currently. By the end of the year, there'll be 140 offering unique services and products throughout our retail brands. So stay tuned on that one.
I think, guys, we'll now hand over for questions. If you have a chance, there are some appendices that are worth a look. 5-year results summary, results in full for this year, some additional segment information, and a reconciliation of management and statutory EBIT, which I know a lot of the analysts will be interested in. Vincent, questions when you're ready.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to queue for a question, please press *1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your first question today comes from the line of David Morbley from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi guys, just a couple of quick questions. Firstly, on the online strategy, as you look to expand in that market, what's your thoughts around the store footprint?
David, I'll answer that one. We are the physical brands, bricks and mortar brands, say for example Flight Centre, we want to make the on and offline a complementary, not a competitive offering. So we are looking at how we do things like allowing customers to do certain parts of the transaction online, finish them in store, and you'll see a lot more of that. We will also have very online-focused brands such as QuickBeds, which I don't think we mentioned, which continues to improve. But again, it'll be offered through our shops as well as another mechanism to expand the product that they can make available to customers.
Sure, sure. So I understand that. But so with that sort of strategy that you're talking there, so having an online presence and a bricks and mortar presence, do you think your current footprint is big enough to support that, or would you look to reduce it or expand it? Or?
Oh no, we would see the websites as a backing the shops and the shops backing the website. So I think that's something unique we can bring to an online space, that we've got this local convenience of a shop to back up the website offering.
Right, okay.
So no, I wouldn't see us reducing the shops a la what STA have done to grow the online.
Okay. And then maybe just for Flano, appreciate there's a lot of moving parts, but maybe just on that 10% growth, if you could just give us some high-level commentary around each of the regions, so maybe just Australia, UK and US, and what your thoughts are, how you get to that sort of 10%.
David, look, I think it's fair to say that we're expecting 10% physical growth from most of markets except for the USA.
Okay.
The USA, I think we've spoken about before, in the leisure space, we feel we've probably got around the right numbers now, and when opportunities present themselves, we'll take them if they're fairly compelling. The corporate business in the USA is doing very, very well, so we'll continue to invest in that. But generally speaking, we're pretty pleased that we've got 10% at least opportunities in all markets except for the USA retail business for the moment.
Okay, thanks.
Your next question today comes from the line of Alex Nears from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Morning, guys. Just a quick question on the corporate side of the business. Obviously, a good outcome this year. I was just wondering if in the last few weeks you've seen any downturn in activity in the corporate sector, and if we do continue to see sluggish economic times, can you continue to grow that business in FY12 through market share gains?
Yeah, Alex, it's Screw here. Look, we're pretty confident that the corporate is going to continue okay, unless, you know, obviously if everything falls in a heap, you know, e.g. there's another, or the GFC, if it still exists, actually goes into another nosedive, you know, we just can't predict what's going to happen then. But certainly the signs at the moment, and, you know, remember in the States and UK, we've been operating in pretty recessed conditions for some time now, and we're still growing our corporates reasonably strongly. In Australia, it's obviously still going okay, and our corporate growth is going well. And the economy, from a business point of view, is still quite strong, particularly obviously in the mining sector, which we do a reasonable amount of business. So, yeah, we're reasonably confident it'll hang up there. I mean, if you look at the last GFC or the start of the GFC, it took about 6 months for us to be affected from the corporate thing, and even then it wasn't disastrous. So, you know, we're modestly confident that even, you know, we can handle most things from a corporate point of view anyway.
Great. And then just in the UK, obviously good growth in TTV and local currency, but the margins, as you alluded to earlier, were slightly soft. Can we expect to see a material increase in margins next year as the new consultants get up to speed?
Yeah, we, as you can see from that, we had quite strong growth, almost too much growth in sales staff numbers. I think it was around the 18 or 20%. And yeah, the final result, which I suppose is shown through the net margin, was a bit disappointing. And we certainly, as I said, we expect to see a significant growth, albeit from a real, you know, not a huge base. I think it was about £11 or £12 million, but we'd expect a reasonably strong growth on that. You know, assuming there's no disasters over there, you know, no riots. No, I'm joking, actually, but. So yeah, we are looking for good growth there in profits.
Great, thanks, Greg.
Your next question today comes from the line of Anna Chen from Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. I've just got a quick question about the desktop rollout. Is there any CapEx to Flight Centre?
No.
Okay,
very
so it's
little.
Entirely borne by Travelport?
Well, It was negotiated as part of the GDS deal. There is some infrastructure requirements, but to be honest, we've already made those investments.
Okay.
So not huge CapEx at all for us. Not any out of kilter with what we'd normally spend.
Yep.
Anna, sorry, just probably where you're going with that question as well is what's our CapEx expectations for 2012?
Yeah,
so look, we've been saying for some time we expect CapEx to be reasonably consistent with the D&A charge. The D&A charge is around $50 million. That's what we're expecting to spend from a CapEx perspective.
Okay. Yep. And I've also got a couple more questions. One is on the corporate. Obviously, corporate's going to be a main driver of next year in terms of the business. Does that have any impact on your gross income margin and also net margin going forward, as in as the corporate business gets bigger globally?
Yes, no, it definitely does, and it has this year. So part of the reason for our decline in income margin this year has been because of the growth in the corporate business. But happy to say that whilst it impacts in a negative sense in the income margin, it actually has a more positive impact on the net margin because the cost of servicing that business is not as great. You're not paying the same high street rents and the like, Anna. So what you kind of lose, you're kind of making up on the net margin basis. So net, it'll be okay.
Okay, so in terms of longer term leverage on the net margin level, are we supposed to expect improving net margins as the business moves towards more corporate?
I would hope that it would improve, albeit modestly, Anna. So I think we're only talking maybe, you know, 10 or 20 basis points. You're not talking about 0.5% or 1%.
Yep. Okay. So last question is on the UK in terms of growth. Is that largely coming from reduction in cost rather than top line growth, given the weak macro?
Look, we as I said, the last year was a bit disappointing.
Yep.
But we did get the growth. The underlying business is there, and it will continue to grow. So we're pretty confident that. And look, obviously, in all our jurisdictions, costs do have a part. But no, we'll be looking for top line growth and net margin growth there, as much as there may well be some cost reduction, but that won't be significant.
Okay, all right. That's all the questions I've got. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Your next question today comes from the line of Ray David from UBS. Please go ahead.
Oh, g'day, guys. Just following up on the income margin questions, can you give us a sense of how or if you're holding terms with airlines going into FY12? Because I'm clear you said that leisure is slowing and you've seen sort of Qantas exit some routes. I'm just trying to get a sense of where you think terms will be relative to this year in terms of commissions, overrides and so on.
Ray, I'll hand you over to Mel on that, but bear in mind that most of our contracts have basically been done for this financial year, or most of it anyway now. But what is your take on that?
Well, a lot of the contracts have been moved into this year with favourable, similar terms to the ones we've had previously. So, no, I can't see a radical change there. And do you remember a year or two ago we moved into trying to have a lot more certainty with guaranteed margins, and we still maintain that sort of stance going forward. A few of our contracts have a consolidation part of it, if you like, where we can combine corporate leisure sort of growth. So again, if one fires and one doesn't, we can still get an overall growth, positive swing for us. So no, I'm comfortable with the airline space that we've got the good contracts to move forward with.
And Ray, just to confirm, the income margin decline this year is primarily the result of the corporate growth and the aggressive pricing in retail. The actual override margins we've achieved with suppliers have been very consistent.
Yep. And if you sort of stripped out the growth in corporate in Australia for this year, can you give us an idea how the leisure business performed?
The leisure business in Australia this year, it was probably up about, say, 8% or so.
Is that a revenue sense or EBIT?
That's in a TTV sense, mate.
Okay. And just in the USA, you said that you've taken out $30 million of annualized costs. Have those costs been, or has the benefits of those costs fully flowed into this year's result, or should we expect a further improvement next year just from a reduction in costs?
No, we have the full benefit this year.
Okay. Okay, thanks, guys.
Your next question today comes from the line of Mike Younger from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi guys, sorry to harp on the UK, just wondering if there's anything else that's causing that margin to erode, because it would seem that the EBIT to TTV was probably, it was 1.7% in the first half, probably in the order of 1.2, 1.3 in the second half.
No, look, I don't think there was, some of the things that we did do, and I think if you talk to our EGM over there, Chris Galanti, he would agree, is they probably expanded the two things a little bit too much too fast last year. It certainly resulted in TTV growth of 20%, but it did hurt the underlying margins, net margins and profitability a little bit. And that was, we did open quite a few new businesses as well as growing the staff. And probably in reflection, this is going to be a little bit more consolidation. We'll still grow staff numbers and business numbers, but not to the same extent as last year, so that we can actually get the benefit of the base that was built last year and let it flow down to the bottom line. And we're pretty confident that our net margin will come back significantly this year. Our long-term goal is, I think, 2013-14, is to get to $1 billion, £1 billion TTV there, but also have a good net margin at the same time. And we're sort of on track for that this year. It wasn't, we probably just overdid the expansion in consultant numbers and business and new businesses.
Mike, the other thing I would add, mate, is that we really saw the UK business start to slow down when those UK austerity measures started to kick in, which I think was around January, February time. So VAT going up, public sector cuts. So that didn't help the cause either.
Okay. With regards to current performance, you've suggested July was tracking well. What kind of TTV growth have we seen year to date?
Look, I don't know that, but Plano would probably know. I said, you know, it's going pretty okay. I'm not sure whether that translates to well, but it's certainly going to our expectations for the guidance we've given this year. So you know how sometimes you can have a horrible start to years and it'll come good, but yeah, we're reasonably confident it's not a bad start compared to previous years, and that's both in TTV and the bottom line. And not only in Australia either, generally everywhere is up to expectations.
Okay, and just a final question for me. On US, what percentage of your TTV over there at the moment is corporate versus leisure?
It's about... Michael's doing a quick calculation of mine. It's about 25 to 30%.
So that's the corporate component, is it?
Correct.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Your next question today comes from the line of Raymond Gonzalez from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi, how are you going?
Good.
Just got one question. So in Australia, you mentioned you invested $15 to $20 million in front office staff. Do you expect that same level of investment over the next 12 months?
What actually happened here is we decided, after you probably heard about the GFC or whatever it is, but during that period, we basically left our salaries alone, you know, the front-end staff, particularly the retainers. And so it's just inevitably got behind. And I think if you remember, we did say that there was a significant growth in the retainers of basically all staff, which added that 15 to 20 million. I don't think that was just in Australia either. Was
that?
That was globally. And so, you know, we basically caught up to where we're pretty happy with that. So, no, it won't be recurring per se. Most of the increase in salaries will come through what we hope is growth in incentive payments.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Rob.
Your next question today comes from the line of Tony Sina from Selector. Please go ahead. Hello, Tony. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. Just a couple of questions, if I could. Just on the corporate, I've seen it for many years that you've indicated what the corporate TTV is, 25 to 30%. Is that as accurate as you get it? I mean, in terms of the growth, because it would appear that the corporate is actually contributing a lot more, but you've indicated 25 to 30. Have you been able to drill it down to being reasonably exact on that?
Tony, there's a couple of things that you need to look at here. Some of our retail business holds some SME corporate in it, yeah, some of our leisure retail. But generally, our globally, and bear in mind some of our overseas, you know, particularly in Asia and Middle East, is mainly corporate, you know, nearly all corporate as a matter of fact. And we're just growing our leisure retail there. But corporate is about, at the moment, we feel the pure corporate's about 28%. In terms of TDV, and probably closer to around the 35% in terms of profit.
Okay. And in terms of its size, you made a comment, that globally you would be regarded as perhaps one of the largest in that field. Can you expand a little bit and think, you know, what's the opportunity in front of you in terms of expanding the corporate side?
Well, look, we've for probably 6 or 7 years, we've had our FCM Travel Solutions global brand. We're in 60 countries, of which, you know, obviously our 10 or 11 are fully owned equity, whereas in the other ways they're licensed. And we're getting more and more traction on this. Something like, I think we reckon about 20-25% of our TDV comes through our relationship with licensed partners. So there's plenty of further opportunity. For example, our major partners in throughout Asia, probably the biggest one is in Germany, and we give them a fair bit of business. They give us a fair bit of business. A lot of it's connected to our growth in the States, because a lot of the big accounts come out of the States. And I think we're about, you know, in terms of global what they call TMCs, we're probably about the fourth or fifth at the moment. So, you know, most of the major tenders that go out and travel in most countries, we will tender. Whether we actually want to take some of this business on, because some of it is very low margin, does depend on a range of factors. But yeah, this is a strategy we've been working on now for a good 6 years, and you know, I think we're pretty good at it, but we've still got a long way to go.
Tony, it's probably just worth mentioning one other thing, and that is, because of our strong balance sheet, we are in the unique position in many markets of being able to offer credit, which is not always the case with other corporate travel providers. So that is a reasonably unique selling proposition, and that has been a major reason we've had a lot of take-up in the US market. So, you know, we're fortunate that the leisure business has been able to generate the cash, which then allows us to kind of go into new markets.
Okay, and then from a debt perspective, I mean, have you had any sort of bad experiences by providing the credit?
No, so far we've been very lucky, and that includes the GFC period. And what, again, is reasonably unique about our model is that any write-offs actually go directly back to the consultants that won that business. So it's not like any bad debts are written off at a head office level. It hurts the guys that actually sold. So there's a lot of motivation within the selling teams to ensure that their customers are paying within terms. So we've been very, very fortunate for a period of time now, but I think a large part of that is the motivation factor.
Just on your comments just on 2012, I think you've indicated 10% at the profit before tax line growth. If you look at, say, this year's result, where TTV was up 12% and maybe 17% pre-FX, and your bottom line was up, profit before tax is up, I think, 20% or thereabouts. Are you suggesting by that outlook that the TTV is marginal growth, or is it less than 10% TTV growth you're indicating there?
No, we're looking at around the 10%, and I suppose we're assuming that a lot of the growth in net margin that we've achieved this year, where it's probably going to hold about the same. It's not necessarily being conservative either, because, you know, it is a mixed outlook over the next 12 months, I think, generally. And obviously every country is a little bit different. Every country's got a different mix of corporate and leisure business. But so we'll be reasonably happy if we can maintain the, you know, both 10% in the TTV and the bottom line.
Okay, and just a couple of more for that, if you don't mind. With respect to the interest payments you receive on your cash, I think Andrew made a comment about it's less than previous years, and you mentioned something about the BOSS payments. Are we likely to see the interest received rise over the course of this year versus perhaps last year?
Tony, I'm not sure I actually made a comment like that, so maybe something I said earlier confused you, but certainly this year interest revenue represents $40 million, which is up, I think, from $27, $28 million last year. So that's been a very healthy increase.
I was talking about the net difference being the $40 offset by the $33 you paid out. So perhaps.
Okay. Of that $33, I think from memory about $25 of that relates to the debenture program. We don't expect that to change with the self-funding arrangement we've put in place. If anything, we expect to earn a little bit more money on the funds that we've got in place. So we might see a slight increase in the overall earn, but nothing substantial to change the results.
Okay. And just on your payment, your dividend payout, obviously it rose, but it represents 50%. You've indicated 50 to 60% payout in the past, and you've got, obviously, you're increasing franking credits to $175 million. Any reason why you're sticking at 50 rather than 55 or 60 in terms of the range you've given in the past?
Look, I think, Tony, it's fair to say that during the GFC, we made a couple of dividend payments at the 60% range, and we found very quickly that the GFC came around and we would have preferred maybe to hang on to a little bit more of that money. So I think that the directors have felt that 50% rate is probably about right, given volatility in the marketplace. And that volatility really hasn't gone away for the last couple of years. But having said that, I can reassure you that the franking credit balance and the cash position is something the directors are very, very aware of, and it's constantly discussed. So please don't think for a moment that that's not given a lot of consideration, because it really is.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to queue for a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from the line of Peter Drew from Hunter Green. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi guys. I just had a couple of questions. The first one, just on the CapEx, there's proceeds from investments of about $39 million. Just curious as to what that is.
Peter, during the course of the year, we obviously have various investments, whether they be corporate bonds or other type of instruments that we put our cash into during the course of the year. And when they mature, that's that gets reflected in that line in the cash flow.
Yep. Okay. And can you just tell me the actual increase in sales headcount in Australia in FY11?
Yes. Can you just bear with me?
I think it was around the 9%, Peter, from memory, but it's around that sort of figure.
Okay.
And yeah, believe it or not, when you've got 6,000 salespeople, 6 or 7, it's that's quite a challenge to keep that up. But it's something we're reasonably well focused on.
Yep.
9.5%, Peter.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. And just in terms of the US, you know, you said that your expectations around TTV growth aren't as bullish, I guess, as the rest of the world. What's the outlook for EBIT in FY12 for the US business?
Look, we'd like to grow it, and we think we will grow it. We're certainly growing our corporate as well as the Liberty Go-Go side of it. One of the things with, and that's EBIT, but just with the TTV, to remember, a lot of our leisure business comes from Mexico, Caribbean, and the States, and it does, besides the translating into US into Australian dollars, tends to lower that a bit, but also the property pricing is quite, has been pretty low as well. So just getting growth in TTV, even with the same number of passengers, and that has been quite a challenge over the last couple of years, and does explain some of the drop in, or you know, the not increasing TTV as well.
Yep. Okay. And could you just back to the one of the questions from the previous caller, just in terms of, I guess, the translation between, you know, TTV growth and PBT growth. I'm just trying to understand, is the risk at the TTV line, or you know, at EBIT, in terms of, you know, I guess as was said previously, you know, if you're getting something like 10% TTV growth, then you should be seeing that leverage, and you should be seeing, you know, a lot more growth in at PBT. So I'm just trying to get a better feel for, you know, sort of what you said around the EBIT margin.
Look, I think we feel there's a fair bit of EBIT that's already, you know, that we managed to get up last year. And if we can get around the 10%, you're right, that's about what we need to make sure our EBIT grows at least at the same amount. You know, whereas if it's at 5%, as we've seen in the past, it does challenge your growth, because the back-end overrides it, and that it challenges the growth in EBIT as well. But our feeling is at the moment that 10% growth in TTV, which it's going to take some effort to get there overall, particularly in Australia, because we are so large here, and particularly when airfare prices and other travel prices tend to be down a little because of the strong dollar, you know, particularly whether it's tours or airfares. You know, we think that if we get that 10% TTV, that the 10% EBIT should be okay, but there's no absolute guarantees we're going to get that 10% TTV either.
Yep. Okay. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Ben.
Your next question today comes from the line of Tim Mitchell from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. So sorry to bore everyone, but on the US again, I'm just trying to get an understanding of the profitability between the different business segments. Is it reasonable to assume that both leisure and wholesale were loss-making during the year and that corporate was the only sort of profitable arm?
What was the actual numbers on EBIT there, Flo?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say, Tim, on an EBIT basis, it's probably fair to say that corporate was certainly profitable. GoGo was pretty much almost near break-even proposition, and leisure was certainly in the red, but not by a very large degree.
But remember, there's that fourth pillar of product sales outside the USA, which was quite profitable, and certainly growth on the previous year.
Okay, and with the sales staff or sales consultant ratio, that's up at sort of the levels now that you're happy with?
In the US market?
Yes.
Look, I'm not sure what... the actual sales to support ratio were okay. We're certainly not happy with the productivity of our sales staff there, and it's one of the focus we have. You know, obviously, we inherited a lot of people 2.5 years ago, we're not happy with all the people we've got there, and that's one of the challenges we've got to, get the sales process and better salespeople throughout the process, throughout the company.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question today comes from the line of Richard Ivers from Ord Minnett. Please go ahead.
G'day, guys. Just wondering if you'd give us a bit more colour on July-August trading. For example, inquiry levels and conversion rates for the leisure sector?
Yeah, look, we haven't got the August results out yet, have we, Flo?
No, the month hasn't finished yet.
Oh, okay. He is a bit slack. But, yeah, the mid-month estimates look okay from, in most of our markets and particularly in Australia. Not necessarily brilliant, but we're reasonably happy with where we've actually pitched our TDV and EBIT growth from the first couple of months, and it's very early days. But that's is there anything else you'd like to add, Flo?
No, look, I think it was a healthy start to July. I think we were pleased with July, but I think like everyone, we're very nervous about what the next number of months hold, Richard. So. 1 month doesn't make a year, but it was a positive start to the year.
There hasn't been any change in sort of trends, those key trends?
No, I think, I can't remember who asked the question before, but we haven't seen a dramatic slowdown in the corporate business with the volatility, albeit, expectations would be that companies are looking closely at their travel spend in anticipation of any further volatility. And retail remains what it was before, and that is people are buying, but they need a compelling reason to buy. So the trends are very much the same.
And just on your inquiry level, our inquiry levels are holding up okay for the first couple of months. So that's and we've got our fingers and toes crossed that continues like that.
Great. And then the cash, I think previously you'd said it's about 70% in Australia. Is that still the case?
It might be a little bit higher than that now, Richard. We've encouraged the overseas countries to give us any excess cash they might have because we think we can get better yields over here, even after taking into consideration FX. So it's probably a little bit higher than that.
Okay, great. And then last one, just on that Appendix 5, you've reconciled the EBIT, and there's a couple of items in there on the interest, revenue and expense.
Yeah.
I think the 7 and the 28, it looks like the 7 is backing out for the boss, I think. But the 28 on the interest revenue, I'm just trying to get an understanding of what that is.
Okay, so, righto. So, sorry, this will either confuse or clarify for people, so just bear with me. The management view of EBIT, which is what, unfortunately, we're required to put in the financial statements, is $224 million. And included in that number is any interest that we pay to the wholesale business for funds that they actually earn, but we don't pay any other interest to any other business throughout the group that sits outside that. So basically what we're saying is that we've earned $40 million of interest in total during the course of the year, but we actually have given $28 million away to another part of the business. So the difference is 16, brings it back to a statutory number. On the interest side, you're absolutely right. Our interest expense for the year was $34 million, of which $7 million relates to the actual debt interest, and the balance relates to BOS. And BOS is actually included in expenses for our purposes and included in that $224 million number. So I've either confused you or clarified, and Richard, I'm happy to walk you through over the phone after the call if that helps.
No worries. And the part of the interest revenue is actually intercompany interest revenue, if you like.
It's effectively interest revenue that we allow to go into the results of the wholesale business, which is not what we allow for either the retail or corporate businesses. So it reflects that's in their results, yes.
All right. Thanks, Phyllis.
There are no further questions at this time. I would now like to hand the conference back to your presenters today. Please continue.
Thanks very much, everyone. If anyone's got any calls, give me a buzz after it, and we'll see if we can help you out. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you all for participating. You may all disconnect.